We begin every Thursday with industry chatter, where we bring in a member of the federal business community and talk about what they're seeing in the marketplace and the experience they're having in doing business with the federal government. And I'm pleased to welcome today the Senior Vice President of Operations for the Innovative Solutions Group. Roby Wood is my guest. Nice to have you in the studio today. Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's great to be here. Nice to meet you.
You too. Let's start with the elevator speech, the pitch about your company. Talk about what you do for your federal clients.
Well, ISG is a small business that basically began for the purpose of doing business transformation type work. We had a contract with the U.S. Forest Service, which has kind of grown into doing work with the Forest Service and other agencies within USDA.
Mm-hmm.
Focused on electronic government, enterprise architecture, and business transformation type projects. So mm-hmm. it's projects that are generally in the innovation area, some of them a little bit outside the box. And if you compare it to regular IT projects that are either trying to support basic operations or operation and maintenance type activities. You know, these are projects where they're really trying to do something innovative and, mm-hmm. and improve the cost picture in terms of what the business processes are costing government and new ways of doing work.
Mm-hmm.
Also really trying to integrate this rush of new technology that comes at us, and how do we make effective use and see how those new technologies actually impact what the requirements would be in business process. A lot of in the old days, we used to talk about going and trying to gather requirements, and then we're going to build a system that meets those requirements. Today, you know, something like the iPhone shows up and the world changes.
Mm-hmm.
So we take a look at those kinds of things and try and determine you know, what is the impact? You know, how does this affect your business? How can we make effective use of these kinds of technologies?
Mm-hmm. Is the driver for innovation in government now, or the driver maybe for being receptive to innovation in government, really only the cost obligation or problem now? Or are agencies receptive to innovation in a number of different ways? I think if you went to the average person on the street, maybe even the average person in an agency, they wouldn't say, we're a tremendously innovative place.
Right. A lot of it's driven by cost. I mean, I think most of the folks that we work with in the agencies are conscious of the issues with the federal budget and the need to reduce costs and so forth. And you know, how can we still get the job done while budgets are either holding steady or shrinking a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is certainly one issue. But the other is really just how to be more effective in getting the job done and serving the public. One of the projects we've been involved in has been a mobile computing project, where there's been a large research and development component to that. We work with the firefighting community, for example, and law enforcement community within the Forest Service and USDA, where, you know, there are lives at stake.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have an opportunity to really try and look at really down and dirty. Let's get these things out in the field. Let's field test it. Let's build a business case and a use case for the various types of hardware and software technologies. And really, how is this going to be a game changer in how we fight fires or how we keep law enforcement officers a little bit safer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of these folks are, their nearest backup might be several miles away. You know, they have 300,000 acres to patrol.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a whole set of different issues when some serious stuff comes up. And they do have some serious law enforcement issues out in those rural areas.
Mm-hmm. The whole concept of mobile computing and technology has really changed the game for everybody in IT and government. And the idea that one of those law enforcement folks or one of those firefighters might have some kind of technological idea or concept is driving a lot of that change. Are you seeing that with the government customers that you deal with, where the actual end user is coming in and saying, not only do I have an idea about what I'd like to be able to do, but I am familiar enough with the technology to be able to tell you exactly what you should go out and get for me?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think all the IT organizations, certainly in the Forest Service, but I think across the government, that's a big issue that they're having to struggle with. It's tough to control that IT environment where you have some strict regulations on what can be done and what can't be done.
Mm-hmm.
People can do it at home.
Yeah.
You know, they've got an iPhone or an Android and so forth, a tablet PC, and they think, well, why can't I do this at work? I'm struggling. Well, they bring those solutions into the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, then it's a struggle from an official perspective to, well, how are we going to harness this? And how are we going to make sure there aren't problems? Of course, the biggest concern is usually security issues and so forth. And, you know, we have been actually working with the Forest Service to look at that. There are technologies out there, for example, mobile device management technologies that allow you to manage that device environment. And actually, literally, you could take somebody's iPhone from home and split it in half and have a business side and still a personal side.
Mm-hmm.
That introduces all kinds of other issues, I think, for the government from a policy standpoint.
Yeah.
How do we pay for this? Or, you know, if somebody's bringing their own phone, is that, you know, how does that work exactly? But yeah, but that there definitely is a big driver, a big expectation that's come about. And IT staffs generally have always struggled. They're usually the bad guys and so on and so forth. This makes their life even a little more difficult.
Yeah.
But it is the great challenge out there. But it's also exciting at the same time.
I was at the event where Vivek Kundra proposed giving employees a stipend to let them go buy whatever technology they wanted. And the vendors in the room all were going, this is a terrific idea. We love this. This is great. Sure. And all the agency people were going, oh, you got to be kidding me. It was obvious what the implications were for each part of that audience.
Right.
And I imagine you're seeing the same thing. The end users are going, this is terrific that we are able to do this. And the CISOs and the CIOs are going, I don't need another thing on my list.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, an organization like the Forest Service, widely dispersed across the landscape, you know, literally 193 million acres that they have to worry about. And so there are folks out there literally in the hinterland and becoming more and more sophisticated in terms of their own use of technology. So, that's a challenge.
You talked about one element of that technology challenge that I want to come back to when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Roby Wood is the Senior Vice President of Operations for ISG, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Do you know us? You count on our technology every day. The office elevator that takes you up and down efficiently. The jet engine that gets you home safely. The fire suppression system you hope you never need, but know is there. You count on things we make to protect you from harm, and even to keep you cool and comfortable. Our technologies are a critical part of your everyday life. Yet many people don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. In fact, we are one of the largest manufacturers in the United States, which likely makes us the biggest company you've never heard of, even though you depend on us every single day. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
This century's work models are based on collaboration, but how do you define, manage, and more importantly, increase collaboration to improve performance? Join Federal News Radio and Cisco for the Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability Series. This fifth panel in the series focuses on smart buildings, exploring how to increase the intelligence of your agency's buildings, workplaces, and workspaces. Smart, intelligent buildings can enable new workforce models that also leverage cloud services when delivering an agency's task or mission. Rapid, anywhere, anywhen access to people and information is increasingly more critical and affects the speed and quality of decision-making. How can you increase performance and ensure sustainability of government while transitioning to these new workforce models without increasing risk and cost? Tune in June 14th at Federal News Radio, 1500 AM at noon, to hear experts from government and industry discuss these topics and more. For more information, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword work.
Agencies demand comprehensive IT solutions. Level 3 Communications delivers it. Agencies demand reliability for data center networking. Level 3 delivers it. Agencies demand a scalable network for high-performance websites. Level 3 delivers it. Agencies demand simple contracts. Level 3 delivers it on networks and WITS 3. To see why more than 200 federal agencies and divisions are partnering with Level 3 Communications, visit level3.com/federal.
Vacation time is just around the corner. Ready to go? Since 1967, Ackerman Security has been keeping families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, you can trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center. Ackerman offers the latest technology like cell phone control, wireless monitoring, and remote video to your web-enabled phone, iPad, or laptop. Federal government employees get an added bonus. 4 months of monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Friday morning's Federal Drive. USCIS is partnering with other agencies to fight immigration services scams. Details about the new initiative from the Director of Citizenship and Immigration Services. And so many cybersecurity policies coming down the pike. We're going to connect those dots with Deloitte & Touche. That and more Friday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, check out our website, federalnewsradio.com.
Older Boomers Driving. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Boomers grew up behind the wheel, but as the baby boom generation reaches senior citizen status, 65 is no longer just a speed limit. At the National Institutes of Health, Dr. Jonathan King says about 2 million more drivers will hit 65, the age, this year. And he reminds the new seniors that they're not as spry as they once were.
There's arthritis, there's inability to make the head turn to look in the side window. There are changes in vision, but most older drivers are fairly cognizant of those and will drive less at night or if they know that they have visual issues.
King says, though, that they might not realize their ability to pay attention, to concentrate on what's important while driving, also falls off. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Roby Wood of ISG is my guest on Industry Chatter today. And you said something earlier that I thought was really interesting when it comes to harnessing all kinds of advanced technology, but especially mobile technology to agencies. You said that agencies are figuring out how to harness it and make it work to meet the mission of the agency. That's kind of a departure from where we were, I'd say, 2 years ago, where a lot of people were trying to figure out how to prevent any kind of intrusion on non-approved technology devices or whatever it is. Is that happening, do you think, because of enlightenment on the parts of the agencies where they're saying, hey, these can be really great tools to help us? Or is it more of a fact that they're just kind of giving up on this wave that's going to wash over them regardless, so we might as well just go with the flow?
It's probably a little bit of both. I think there is a recognition that that there's innovation occurring, and we need to figure out how to harness it. And, you know, there's a bit of, you know, there are still elements where groups that have a certain responsibility, certainly in the security arena or the formal application development organizations, where they really feel that they need to control it. Otherwise, non-standard architectures would be implemented and, you know, we might add to the confusion rather than doing things in an orderly way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still that conflict. And But I think along with that is the realization that, you know, we can't control this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's happening, you know, again, bring your own technology kind of an environment. Especially in an organization where people, you know, like the Forest Service, where people tend to be innovators,
mm-hmm.
people that actually literally work in the woods have to improvise all the time to get their job done.
Mm-hmm.
And So it's nice, and in our approach is we've tried to go right out to those people in the field and work directly with them to find out what they are using and get a handle on what their requirements are.
That's got to be fascinating to go into those environments and talk to those people one-on-one and understand what their job is on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And really to be able to get a handle on what you need to do to serve them.
Yeah, it's fun too, because people are usually fairly receptive. Some people are, you get the impression that, geez, nobody's ever asked me what I do, and they have a lot to say.
Uh-huh.
So it can be just fun from that standpoint. But they are definitely in tune to kind of what the possibilities are when they think about their requirements and maybe how some of it could be solved. We talked to one group. They were sort of, had done just what we spoke about. They went out and got their own iPhones kind of as a group,
mm-hmm.
and had some software that they were using to communicate within their own little group. And it was basically taking whatever information exchange was occurring, whatever data was being created as a result of that activity. And this is where you get into what the issue is for the agency, is now you've got some key really corporate information that's sitting out there on this new island.
Yeah.
And that's where you get into this conflict of people that are worried about getting my job done on a day-to-day tactical kind of basis,
mm-hmm.
versus how does the agency manage its information,
yeah.
and so forth, and keep some control over it.
But, yeah. Because, with that information floating around on X number of iPhones out there,
right.
and not knowing what else is on those devices to be able to try to harvest that information, that can make security people pretty queasy.
Right. And so I think that's, as it kind of unfolds, my view is rather than just stop it, is to try and say, well, how do we employ other technologies such as middleware, hardware and software kinds of technologies that mm-hmm. can bring some order so we can manage these things from an enterprise perspective while you're giving the people who are doing the work some freedom to bring those new ideas in to the organization. We found that 5 years ago even. There are, for example, people whose job it is to, when they go to fight fire, they're the analysts that determine what fire behavior is, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll go out, and I've talked to one individual. He actually wrote his own software, had it on a PDA at the time, and didn't dare try to connect it to the network because it was a sort of a rogue application.
Mm-hmm.
But yet he was out using that application on fires to measure flame length and other performance characteristics of the fire so they could try and predict what the fire was going to do, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So very mission critical piece of software, but that was developed locally. And so what we tried to work with the Forest Service to think about, how do you identify those things? And rather than shutting them down, how do we have a process where we can kind of bring them in and at least recognize that what they've done with their little application, even though maybe cobbled together as it might be, it represents a very serious set of requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we both use what they've done to capture those requirements and then to help then feedback and support them with solutions that may be more mainstream mm-hmm. organizations.
It's almost like the reverse of the apps for the Army, where the Army said, show us what you can do, essentially. These people have already done it.
Right.
And it's a matter of bringing it, first of all, I guess, creating a culture where they feel comfortable to bring it to the agency instead of, like you're saying, this guy was almost doing it on the QT, didn't
right.
want anybody to know that he was doing it this way, where there was a potential resource that really could have moved the whole efforts of the other people that had to do the same thing he did forward tremendously.
Right. Right. And, you have an organization where people are just about in every state.
Mm-hmm.
There are, there are pockets of those folks all over the place, and they may be doing slightly different things. So, Apple comes along and creates the App Store. Well, what if you had an App Store kind of environment where you defined what the requirements were for something to get certified as an approved application, and you let these creative types go at it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you have 5 different applications to collect trails data, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And the user can maybe select the one that they're most comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've expanded, you know, the ability to anybody to contribute, but you find a way to make it so it gets some sort of approval, some sort of mainstream, meets certain security requirements and so forth. And you have to do it rapidly
mm-hmm.
because, you know, in the old days, we used to have a lot of time to sit around and do waterfall type approaches to gathering requirements and doing very detailed documentation and so forth. You do that now, you probably miss two generations
yep.
of technology change.
That's
so,
right.
So trying to look at creative ways to say, well, how do we harness this and find ways to deal with the rapid change.
Mm-hmm. You've talked a lot about the end users. And when we come back, I want to talk about the connections between you and the acquisition communities in the agencies that you deal with and the end users and how you all are working together. We'll do that okay. when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Roby Wood, the Senior Vice President of Operations at the Innovative Solutions Group, ISG. And we'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
Who watch over the skies, it says the enemy can't see you. To the Marines who carry out their mission on the ground, it says I have your back. To adversaries, it says don't even think about it. It is the F-35B, the fifth generation multi-role fighter jet that combines short takeoff and vertical landing capability with supersonic speed and radar evading stealth. The F-35B, the multi-role fighter that's equipped to go wherever Marines must go. Wherever the mission takes them, our Marines know it will be there. It's the F-35B, a fighter jet that can take off and land virtually anywhere, from the most remote, austere airfields and roads to modern ships. That means it can be based close to frontline combat, shrinking the distance between base and target. For the Marines and for our nation, that's a game-changing advantage. The F-35B, the multi-role fighter that's equipped to go wherever Marines must go.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The National Archives and Records Administration has picked its first Wikipedian in residence. The new position is designed to serve as a liaison between the archives and the volunteer editors of the free online encyclopedia. Archives officials say their new Wikipedian, Dominic McDevitt Parks, will help them collaborate with users and editors of the site to make the government's permanent record holdings available through Wikipedia itself, rather than just through the archives' own site.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Attention employees of the intelligence community and Department of Defense. Right now, you could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500.
Profile America, Thursday, June 9th. This is National Rose Month, celebrating America's favorite flower, grown in all 50 states. One of the biggest celebrations is going on now and will wind up this weekend, the Portland, Oregon Rose Festival. This is the 104th annual festival and is expected to draw some 2 million people. There are more than 50 events featuring three grand parades, dragon boat races, a waterfront village, and visits by U.S. Navy ships. Roses mark all sorts of events, weddings, Valentine's Day, graduations, anniversaries, and birthdays. The flowers are a mainstay of America's 18,500 florists. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
C
celebrate summer and support the Boys and Girls Clubs at Safeway's Barbecue Battle, June 25th and 26th on Pennsylvania Avenue. This great family event features the nation's best barbecue, along with 30 great rock, R&B, and blues bands, plenty of free food samples, celebrity chefs, contests, prizes, and more. Easy to get to by Metro. Call 202-828-3099 or visit bbqdc.com. See you at the barbecue.
Profile America, Thursday, June 9th. This is National Rose Month, celebrating America's favorite flower grown in all 50 states. One of the biggest celebrations is going on now and will wind up this weekend, the Portland, Oregon Rose Festival. This is the 104th annual festival and is expected to draw some 2 million people. There are more than 50 events featuring three grand parades, dragon boat races, a waterfront village, and visits by U.S. Navy ships. Roses mark all sorts of events, weddings, Valentine's Day, graduations, anniversaries, and birthdays. The flowers are a mainstay of America's 18,500 florists. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter today with Roby Wood, the Senior Vice President of Operations at ISG, Innovative Solutions Group. We were talking about, and you've mentioned a lot through the course of this conversation, the discussions that your company has with the end users of these things. I have project managers inside the agencies, folks who are working on these projects at the vendors, and other folks say, from the time that I see the requirements until the time I deliver the finished product and turn it on, I don't really see any end users. I'm dealing with the acquisition shop and the project manager, but the project manager's job is to manage the project, not necessarily to use the thing when we're done with it, and that presents some issues sometimes. It sounds like the agencies that you're dealing with have a better feel for that at making sure the end users are involved in that time between the award of the contract and the delivery date. What is it about that success that makes your job easier? And what is it about having the end user involved that winds up with a better product at the end of the process?
Well, I think they when they're involved there and you can keep a good communication flow throughout the process, even if the results aren't exactly what they would have expected, at least they're informed about it along the way rather than something that sort of gets thrown over the wall and it changes their life.
Mm-hmm.
Because it obviously various workflow business processes that they have to deal with are changed or impacted by some new system that comes along and so forth. So it's, you know, it's something we've been talking about in the industry for a long time. Mm-hmm. How do we manage requirements? How do we satisfy end user needs? And, you know, it is amazing that we, even though that's something we've been probably talking about for 30 years, mm-hmm. that you still find pockets of it not being done very well.
Is it getting better, do you think?
I think so. I mean, at least in my experience in the places I've been, everybody at least talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on what organizational situations you get into or competing interests and so forth, how it does get implemented is varies.
Yeah,
I think we had a unique opportunity in the work that we've done here with the Forest Service specifically. Because when we first got involved in the process, it started out from looking at what were defined as several different lines of business within the agency, and essentially we did a modernization plan for each line of business. And the modernization plan looked at overall strategic goals and objectives of the organization, and then tried to identify of the Forest Service overall, and then tried to identify what these lines of business, what their objectives were, and make sure they were tied back to the overall strategy. So there was kind of a strategic approach. And then to break that down is to say, well, what kind of capabilities are required to, you know, to deliver on that? And how do we build those capabilities? And so took that down to a further level of identifying projects, alternative projects and so forth that would deliver those capabilities. So the work that went forward from there was based on kind of these higher level, call them 40,000, 30,000, 20,000 foot level kinds of analyses.
Mm-hmm.
So then on a project basis, the approach was to go right to whoever the users were and have them directly involved on a constant basis. When things are field going, and in this case, literally field going, in a way, it's easier, I think, than when you're just trying to solve problems in a more administrative office type setting,
mm-hmm.
Because you have people that are literally trying to accomplish things, walk a trail and gather trails data or do all kinds of various monitoring activities on the ground following National Environmental Policy Act requirements for establishing any project on the ground. So it's very hands-on oriented. So that's been one thing in our favor, as opposed to trying to deliver some new big benefits claim system or more of an administrative system.
Mm-hmm.
So that maybe kind of helped a little bit.
Yeah. I continue to be amazed at the people who say this terribly frustrating thing happened to us. We went and delivered the product, and the first thing we heard back from the end user was, why doesn't it do this? Yeah. Because they hadn't been involved in that. They'd contributed to the requirements, and then they were shut out of the process from there on out and weren't anywhere involved. My guest is Roby Wood. He's the Senior Vice President of Operations at ISG on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Costello. That growing wildfire in Arizona is moving closer to power stations for three states. NBC's George Lewis says those transmission lines supply electricity as far east as Texas.
There are heavy-duty power lines carrying electricity from the Palo Verde nuclear station here in Arizona eastward. If those lines are ruined by the fire, there could be rolling power blackouts in New Mexico and Texas.
There is still zero containment of the fire. Overseas, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was talking about Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi on a visit to the United Arab Emirates.
We have very good reason to believe that time is on our side, so long as we sustain the pressure.
And here at home, New York Congressman Anthony Weiner says he's still not quitting, even as more colleagues call for the lawmaker's resignation after he sent X-rated online photos of himself and messages to several women, then later lied about it. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Tom Costello, NBC News Radio.
Hello there. My name is Amy, and I work at Lowe's. Father's Day is coming soon, and Lowe's has tons of dad-approved gifts to make his day, like a Cobalt 19-piece mechanics toolkit. Was $29.98, now it's yours for just $19.98. That's a $10 savings. Or how about a Porter Cable 2-piece combo kit? Dad gets an 18-volt drill, circular saw, NiCad battery and charger for just $89. Was $109. We've got what Dad wants. Lowe's, let's build something together. Offers valid now through 6/20. Some restrictions apply while supplies last.
Father's Day is not for celebrating dads. It's for celebrating all our dads are. And now Hallmark's made celebrating dad even easier with new postage paid cards. Just pick the perfect card, then sign, seal, and send. No stamp required. So give it up for the big guy this Father's Day with new postage paid cards, only from Hallmark and available wherever Hallmark is sold.
Postage paid available for select cards, U.S. only.
This week's Kaiser Permanente Experts in Health topic is cholesterol management, featuring Dr. Lan Nguyen, Chief of Adult Primary Care in Northern Virginia for the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group.
Cholesterol is essential for the human body to function, but high cholesterol can be very harmful. High cholesterol promotes plaques to build up in the arteries, blocking blood flow, which can contribute to a heart attack or a stroke. Here are tips to manage your cholesterol. Know your numbers. First, measure your cholesterol levels every 5 years if you are over age of 20. Remember, your LDL should be low and HDL should be high for optimal levels. Get at least 30 minutes of physical activity a day to lower your risk of heart disease. Maintain a healthy weight. If you are overweight, lose 5 to 10 pounds can help lower your risks. Disease prevention is the best way to help you stay well and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's experts in health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
With vacation time just around the corner, Ackerman Security can help keep families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center and switch your existing system at no cost and that great $18.95 rate. And Ackerman is the only company with a guaranteed response time. Federal government employees get an added bonus. 4 months of monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Commerce Department Secretary Gary Locke.
It's not easy, for instance, on one of the first pilots that we did on acquisition reform, to say that, okay, instead of we're going to buy separate licenses for software for each of the computers, we're going to pool them all, we're going to buy them together and buy them basically in bulk. That first example, with just a limited number of computers, we got an 88% reduction in cost.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Do you get enough sleep? And is it good sleep? Your pajamas may soon be able to provide data previously only available in a sleep lab. Forget about all those wires that monitor things like brain activity in sleep studies but may actually keep you from sleeping, says Thomas Lipoma of Nix Devices.
We found specific indicators that can tell us exactly what stage of sleep you're in just from your breathing.
So they've engineered a form-fitting shirt embedded with two strategically placed breath sensor pads and thread-thin wires that send data to a recorder placed in the shirt's pocket.
You can't feel the wires. The pads themselves are so thin, it's almost undetectable as you wear it.
Plug the recorder into your computer and it will upload the data to a website where you can analyze the results at home every morning. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're hearing Roby Wood, the Senior Vice President of Operations at ISG. I gave you a promotion there. I hope your boss doesn't mind.
Yeah, it's, I'll tell him.
Yeah. But don't ask me to take care of the envelope part of it for you. You mentioned earlier, you gave an example when it comes to data security of a group of people who went out, got their own iPhones as a group, and created a way to share information that they gathered in the field. That's a nightmare for the average technology shop at agencies, thinking that there is information that their own people have created that's potentially valuable to somebody that's just floating around out there with no control over it. And you also mentioned at that time, that's when we were talking about the idea of how do we harness it rather than how do we stop people from doing it. And it's encouraging to hear that that's the worldview that agencies have now. There are a couple schools of thought about how to deal with that security issue. I'd like to run through them real quick and then get your thoughts about whether you think they're connected or whether one is better than the other or whatever. The assumption, I think, on most people's parts would be that that data is going to go to the cloud, and so the back and forth between the device and the cloud, not just amongst the devices, is part of the issue. One of the schools of thought is that instead of trying to secure the individual devices, we try to secure the data, and that by making sure that the cloud where that data is being stored is secure and the access point is secure, then we're not as concerned about the actual, whether it's an iPhone or whatever the device is. That's one. Another one is that you divide the device, essentially, that you have a virtual desktop on the device, whether it's a PC or a mobile device or whatever, and that the person can only access that information through a pipe that takes them to the information so that everybody knows that they're allowed to access that information.
What are your thoughts about any of those or all of those? Or I guess the other one is we just make sure that the devices are completely locked down. But how do you do that when it's somebody's personal device and there's some confusion and uncertainty about that? But tell me how you think those concepts might fit together or whether one is superior to another or whatever.
Well, we've done some work on the second one where you have a personal device that basically some segment of it can be locked down. So they have the personal side where they can continue to do what they're doing and the official or work side that that is locked down has got a middleware component that controls that, that does manage the device and manage the data flow from that device to applications that are in that arena, resident on the device, and back-end databases and applications and so forth. So we're essentially actually doing a proof of concept project for that right now. We did an initial study to try and identify what technologies we think are best meeting that requirement. And we've actually done some work with USDA, the Office of the Chief Information Officer at USDA, because they're actively trying to solve that problem. And I think they're looking probably across the board on all three things, mm-hmm. approaches you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
We supplied them with the results of our evaluation. Ultimately, the Forest Service needs to be in sync with what the overall USDA policy is. So mm-hmm. we're hoping that we can provide some support in bridging that gap. That area looks promising to us. That's the one we're most familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you talk about the whole cloud arena and how the data is going to be managed on the back end in the cloud, I think, you know, I talked a little bit during the break about the cloud itself, whether or not it's a dedicated private cloud or just out there, and
mm-hmm.
Some of the security issues that revolve around that. So that's something I'm less familiar with technically, but I know it's certainly on the radar. How do we deal with this?
Yeah,
we've had. Some of the projects that we're working on, when you get back to how do you secure the data, there are other work regarding electronic records and things like that, where electronic collaboration, where the agency is trying to get a handle on, how do you capture records officially, because we are moving also towards an arena of being able to work anywhere. For example, or access anywhere. So the network's out there, the clouds are out there, and you have whatever device that you use to connect. You can connect while you're riding the bus or while you're sitting at home or maybe on a beach somewhere.
Yeah.
And I know the government, USDA and the Forest Service in particular, is looking at more of a work from home capability.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something like electronic records, how you are managing the agency's data, that it's not just all floating around out there somewhere, is going to help enable those kinds of activities where there's a lot more orderly process in terms of maintaining records and so forth.
Yeah. When you mention that, that adds a whole nother element to it, too, that I hadn't thought of, which is somebody's got to go clean all that stuff up afterwards and figure out how to put it in some kind of an order that it makes sense before it goes off to the National Archives, because that stuff all gets saved
right.
for however long.
Right, yeah, and there are procedures and standards in place for what has to be kept, what type of information or record has to be kept for what length of time,
yeah.
and so on and so forth. So, yeah, they are trying to address all those issues. I mean, we've been talking about information management since the days of James Martin Information Engineering and trying to solve the problem of corporate data models and how do we eliminate all redundancy and inconsistent data and so forth. And I don't know that we've ever solved that problem. I think we've added much more in the way of data types and so forth to the environment. I think in a way we kind of muddled through. So this is another example. We did a off-the-cuff assessment, I would say, and based on all the field work that we were doing and came back with a sort of a gee whiz statement that, you know, about 80% of the data in the organization is off the network, is off the official Forest Service network, meaning it's sitting in the systems that I mentioned earlier, people with their ad hoc capabilities, or in the paper world and so forth. And it was one of those statements somebody ran with that and sent it out to a large number of people in the agency, and the response back was, of course that's the case. And sometimes stating the obvious is a good thing. It gets people to, you know, all realize, well, I'm not the only one realizing this. We all realize it. So that's the challenge. I mean, we spend a lot of time talking about how do we organize and characterize and store our corporate information, yet it's, you know, we're only able to garner a small percentage of it.
Yeah. You talked about a little bit of the historic perspective there, and I want to explore that to wrap up when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and then see if there's a way we can turn that to think about the future a little bit. My guest is Roby Wood. He's the Senior Vice President of Operations at ISG, and we'll finish up our conversation in just a moment.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
The Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
Seven agencies are turning to challenges to solve long-standing problems. The Environmental Protection Agency, NASA, and the Homeland Security Department are but a few who are using the challenge.gov platform to seek innovative ideas from the public. Dave McClure is the Associate Administrator in the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at GSA. He says it's a three-step approach to innovation. Discover the ideas, test them, and then accelerate the rollout.
If you're in federal IT, you know the pressure to maximize your agency's IT investment. Visit cdwg.com/datacenter to see how our experts have helped federal agencies virtualize, optimize, consolidate their data centers, and reduce ROI pressure. CDWG, people who get it.
Visit CDWG.com to learn how FlexPod, a scalable infrastructure package from NetApp, Cisco, and VMware, can ease your transition to the cloud.
Agencies demand comprehensive IT solutions. Level 3 Communications delivers it. Demand reliability for data center networking. Level 3 delivers it. Agencies demand a scalable network for high-performance websites. Level 3 delivers it. Agencies demand simple contracts. Level 3 delivers it on networks and WITS 3. To see why more than 200 federal agencies and divisions are partnering with Level 3 Communications, visit level3.com/federal.
How can government executives drive performance in a cutback climate? What are the latest best practices for tackling today's human capital challenges? Join OPM Director John Berry and hundreds of federal managers to learn how to achieve more with less at Excellence in Government, July 11th. Register today for early bird rates, www.excelgov.com. www.excelgov.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Roby Wood of ISG is my guest in studio for the hour on Industry Chatter. And you said something in the last segment that kind of piqued my ears a little bit, and that is essentially the challenges, the root challenges that we're dealing with when it comes to technology today are pretty much the same ones that we've been dealing with for the last however long. They have different names, and they appear to be a little bit different because the technology, the nuts and bolts, have changed over the years. Is there a lesson that you think we can learn at how we approach whatever the next thing is that comes down the pike a year or 5 years from now, as opposed to acting like each new thing is totally brand new and we should approach it like nothing we've ever done before?
Well, I think, like you said, the getting to the root cause of problems rather than just trying to address symptoms is something we need to do a better job at. And each generation of technology that's come along, from mainframe environments to distributed mini computers to the PC, client server, then the web and so forth, each of those, I think, makes some problems disappear because it's a whole new paradigm, but it then introduces a whole new set of problems.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of those, I think, introduced the issue of maybe more information. We used to talk about just trying to organize our discrete transaction data. You know, how do we get transactions straight? And then we used to run reports from those transaction systems and try and figure out how to do some decision making. And then somebody said, well, let's build data warehouses. So we tried to organize information for decision making and you know, a way that you can get at it more quickly instead of trying to drag it out of all these various systems. And that did solve some of the problem of all the data integration we used to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you could leave the transaction systems alone and then bring data in or information in from different systems to pull it together to support the kinds of decisions you want to make. Then we have all kinds of unstructured data now that we have content out there to deal with that's being presented on various, you know, website-type environments and so forth. And so there's a whole new approach now. We didn't have that problem before because we didn't even have the ability to really capture it. Database mm-hmm. systems didn't support it and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So, to your point, I think I'm not a futurist, but whatever that next thing that comes along, maybe it's you know, the cloud technology gets more sophisticated, and you know, the things that we worry about now in terms of trying to manage our own data centers or how do we get applications hosted and so forth become a moot point. You know, so that problem maybe goes away to a degree, but we still have the age-old problem of how do we organize our information for, you know, we used to talk about data and then information. Now we're talking about knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I was sort of kidding around. We had a subcontractor working with us who were experts in the field of knowledge management. And I said, well, what about wisdom? And I thought I had them. But they said, oh, of course, wisdom. They had a definition for wisdom. And I thought, oh, okay. So maybe we'll be talking about wisdom systems 5 years from now. I don't know.
But. And if we are, I'd love to have you come back and talk about them, because that sounds like a pretty interesting way of approaching things. Thanks for a great conversation today. It's been a pleasure to have you in studio.
Well, thanks. Thanks very much for having us.
Happy to do it. Roby Wood is the Senior Vice President of Operations for ISG, Innovative Solutions Group.